Hello and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. I'm going to apologize off the top. It's been a while since our last edition of the Who's On podcast. We had our State of the Program podcast over the Christmas break, but now we are back a little raspier than ever. But we also got a great guest coming on today. We got Brendan Marks, college basketball writer for The Athletic, also covering Duke and North Carolina. Brendan, you're all over ACC hoops, which in most years would have been a good thing. Not so much this year.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a tough watch this year, but that's okay. That gives us something to talk about at least.
Exactly, and that is why you're here. But first, before we get to that, you also dipped your toe into some college football reporting with Bill Belichick coming on at North Carolina. I'm sure that's exactly what you had on your bingo card for 2024. Walk me through just that timeline and just kind of what it's been like in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, you know, I think like most people, when I first heard that this was even on the table, your first instinct is, no, it's not. Like, this can't possibly be happening. And, you know, as time went on, it steadily became more real. And, you know, one of the things that I think was interesting about that whole process was normally, not that North Carolina is a football powerhouse or anything, but normally when you have a football like coaching process of that magnitude for like a relatively well-established, you know, power conference program, you've got all these college insiders sort of, you know, flooding the waves. And that wasn't the case in this sense. So, you know, for me personally, it was really exciting getting to work with some of our NFL reporters, you know, people who had covered Belichick when he was with the Patriots, people who cover the league at large. But no, you know, when it actually started to come to, I wasn't sure up until the day that it became official that it was going to happen. I mean, everyone, all my sources were saying, look, there are still real hurdles, but he's there. North Carolina is pushing its chips to the center of the table, and, you know, we'll see if it works or not. But North Carolina's swinging for the fences at the very least.
And at least giving us some more stuff to talk about come next ACC football season. That media days in Charlotte next year are going to be crazy.
It's going to be dystopian seeing just, you know, random fanboy bloggers trying to ask Bill Belichick a question. I mean, the response is someone should just put a camera there and leave it and publish his responses because they're going to be so funny.
It's going to be something else. All right, let's get into ACC basketball. We talked about it off the top. Not the year that a lot of people around the ACC were hoping for. Currently, though, I was actually surprised when I went and looked. There's six ACC teams in the net top 50 rankings, at least when I looked, and that was last night. Only Duke is ranked in the AP top 25 at the moment. What do you kind of make of where the ACC is right now?
Yeah, you know, like we mentioned, it's been a tough year. You know, I think when you're looking at the ACC, especially in contrast to the other power conferences, there's no doubt that the ACC is having the worst season of any of them. You know, the Big East is certainly not as dominant as it has been the past couple of years. But even in a Connecticut and a Marquette, like there are multiple teams that you feel good about potentially being able to do something of substance. And, you know, in a sport that is as big as college basketball, we obviously focus on the teams at the top. And unfortunately for the ACC, it really only has one team who I think has the potential to make sort of national waves, and that's Duke, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But the thing to me that has been really tough this year is for the past couple of seasons in the ACC, the talk was, okay, there had been Louisville at the bottom, and Louisville had been this anchor for the league, this albatross. And essentially, if you played Louisville, you stood to have nothing to gain if you won. You could win by 40, and it didn't enhance your resume in any way. But if you lost, like Clemson did a couple of years ago, it becomes a fatal blow to your NCAA tournament chances. And this year, there's not just one of those anchors. There's like six of them. You know, six of the 10 worst power conference teams per Ken Pom's efficiency rankings are in the ACC. So, you know, the Virginia Techs of the world, the Boston Colleges, there are multiple of those anchors where in the past there had only been one. So I'll be interested to see how many of those teams do emerge as like pitfalls for the Dukes and the Clemsons and the Pitts of the world. But certainly having that much drag at the bottom of the league, even if there were more contenders at the top, would sort of, you know, bring down the overall quality of the conference.
Yeah, obviously covering Virginia, we went into that Memphis game at home just I think a couple weeks ago. And, you know, basically the mindset was, you got to win a game like this because you're not going to be able to make up ground in the ACC once you get there. So you got to have those non-conference wins. Virginia has played a very tough non-conference schedule. It hasn't helped them because they never got any wins. And frankly, they were never really close, except Memphis. That was a closer game. You know, they looked like they had kind of turned the knob on a few things there. But then, of course, a couple days later, they struggled against American. So Where do you kind of see the end of this for the ACC? You know, come the end of the season, where Selection Sunday, what is the ACC looking at?
It's bleak. I mean, the past 3 years, the ACC has gotten five teams in each season, which represents the fewest 3 year, cumulative total of bids that the ACC has had in a decade. So we're already talking about, all of that slippage that we talk about, regardless of NCAA tournament success, like actually getting teams in the field. The ACC's the last three season has been in a somewhat historic, valley, so to speak. I don't think it is inconceivable that the ACC doesn't even get five teams in this year, which is crazy to think about. To me, Duke is obviously a lock, and I personally think that Duke has the talent that it would be considered a one seed regardless of what conference it was in. Like, I think Duke is a national title contender. It's probably one of the four or five teams nationally that I feel the most confident in. But Duke is going to just compile its way to a number one seed. Because they're going to beat up on all of those anchors I was just talking about, and they're just going to steadily accrue wins. I mean, this should be like a 30-win team just by virtue of the league it's in. I feel good about Clemson. I feel good about Pitt, especially with the injuries that Pitt has had. I think both of those teams are, tournament caliber. And then I would like to believe that one or two of the next, sort of tier of teams will get in. And I would put North Carolina in that tier. I would put SMU in that tier. I would. I probably put Wake Forest in that tier still. They do have that win against Michigan, which is a biggie. And I might even put Louisville in that tier. I think Louisville is going to have to do more to compensate for its non-conference resume, but they did just beat North Carolina. And again, there are wins here. So I think maybe one of those teams gets in. If it were two, that's probably a best case scenario. You have like an NC State-esque run through the tournament, but I think it is, if not probable, entirely possible that the ACC does not even get five teams into the tournament this year, which out of an 18-team conference is just not good enough.
Yeah, especially when you're growing the league this much and as the standard that the ACC has traditionally been at. But how did we get here? And obviously the coaching is a big factor of that. Jim Larranaga just retiring earlier this back in December, and then Leonard Hamilton, looks like things could be winding down for him at Florida State. How did the ACC get here? We could talk about the coaching bit in a little bit because I think that's a really interesting part of this, but how did we get here as a conference?
I think in a lot of ways, the ACC, I'm not a big NASCAR fan, so please, any listeners, do not let that be mistaken. But when I first got my first sports writing job out of college was covering NASCAR. And one of the things that I learned early on was one of the reasons NASCAR sort of struggled to maintain the momentum that it had in the late 90s and in the early 2000s was because rather than focusing on what it was, a regional entity, it tried to become something bigger. It tried to become this national cross-country brand, and it never fully took hold. And now that NASCAR has sort of reverted back to what it was always good at, which was those regional ties, it's starting to see more success. I think the ACC, in a sense, sort of made the same mistake. The ACC always assumed that it was going to have basketball. And so over the last 20 years, as it has systemically gone about trying to enhance the football product, and obviously we can talk about the financial realities behind some of those decisions, but in the process of leaning more heavily into football, the ACC has not invested in basketball the way that it probably needed to sustain at the rate that it was, again, in that golden era of like the 90s and so, the 80s and the 90s. So the coaching is also an inevitable part of it. Half of the coaches in the ACC are in there, the full-time coaches. There's only 16 of them right now with the two openings, the two interim guys. But half of them are in their first 3 years at their respective league. With Larranaga now gone, since the end of the 2020-2021 season, we're talking about, 30 Final Four appearances and 10 national championships, no longer on the sidelines. Like, those things matter. And so, and lastly, in terms of the expansion, the ACC adding these three teams in Cal, Stanford, and SMU, you're not enhancing any sort of regional rivalries. You're not emphasis, the atmosphere is not as big a priority. Like, JPJ is always going to be a great place to watch a game, but do you think that Virginia fans are going to get up for a game against Cal or Stanford as they would against a game, even like a Clemson? They're just not. And so I think you put all of those things together, and it's kind of death by a million paper cuts. It's really more like death by a thousand, sword slashes.
Let's get into the coaching aspect of this because we just talked about Jim Larranega. So in the last 7 years, and it's kind of hard to believe it's only been 7 years, the ACC's lost Roy Williams, Coach K, Jim Boeheim, Mike Bray, Rick Pitino, Jim Larranega, Tony Bennett. And that is,
That's a wing
like,
of the Hall of Fame.
yeah, that's its own branch, yeah, of the Hall of Fame. That is an unreal amount of coaches who had a lot of success. We talked about the Final Fours, the national championships, and just the competitiveness. We always go back to Tony Bennett when he got the job at Virginia. He said one of the main reasons he left Washington State to come to Virginia was the chance to compete against UNC and Duke, Roy Williams, Coach K, Rick Pitino, and all these coaches. None of them are there anymore. And I like this is a fascinating question, and I want to get your thoughts. Who is the best coach in the ACC at this point?
It's really.
Because that was my favorite topic while we were sitting there on New Year's Eve during the NC State Virginia game, up in press row. We're all just talking through, like, well, this guy, I don't know, maybe this guy. And like, where do you land?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fa I've had this same thought experiment with some of my colleagues, and I hit them with a trivia question the other day. I mean, do you know who the three longest tenured coaches in the ACC are now with Larranega gone?
Well,
It's
Hamilton,
Hamilton is
Brownell.
obviously number one. Brownell's number two. Kevin Keats is number three, who effectively saved his job last March. So, to me, if I'm looking at it, I think probably if you're talking total control of the program, you're talking recruiting, you're talking retention, you're talking ability to navigate the portal, you're talking actual like on-court success. Maybe not strictly from an X's and O's perspective, but like I think Jon Scheyer has an argument. In terms of offensive stuff, I think that Steve Forbes is great. I still think, even though he doesn't have the talent he needs, I think Mike Young is really good. I think Micah Shrewsbury is really, really good. And I think that if Marcus Burton weren't hurt, they would be much more of a factor than they are right now. I think I personally, I'm a fan of Pat Kelsey. I really like the style that he plays. And Louisville's been hit hard by injuries, but the fact that he has them even in the position he does in the first season, rebuilding the whole roster, I like that. But I mean, if I had to pick just one, like, can I plead the fifth? Like, I don't really know that there is a good. I mean, I might take Jeff Capel to in totality, in terms of success, in terms of recruiting, in terms of stability. Brad Brownell, maybe. I mean, it might be Brad Brownell.
Brad Brownell was one that I had up the top of my list, which is crazy to think because think of the number of times that guy has been on the hot seat in recent years at Clemson, and now he finally broke through last year, and now it looks like he has another good team down there in Clemson. It's such a fascinating thing because there's some good young up and coming guys, but no one with a track record, no one with really anything on their resume at this point. So it's fascinating, and I'm a big Mike Young believer, but at some point there too, like you got to have the players, and if you're not doing that component of it, then the X's and O's stuff is great, but because I've always been impressed by his offenses, which has always given Virginia trouble. And you think about that
Absolutely.
those Virginia defenses, but for somehow Mike Young has always figured out a way to exploit the pack line. So that's why I've appreciated him over the years.
Mike Young's one of the few active ACC coaches who's won the ACC tournament. I mean, let's not forget that like Mike Young won the ACC tournament. He beat Coach K in his final season. Like he beat that Final Four team. Like, that Hunter Couture team was really good, and he's just been devastated by the portal. And like, I think that is as much, it's not just the fact that these coaches aren't on the sidelines anymore. It's the fact that in the modern era, if I am a high school recruit right now, I don't necessarily care about the laundry as much as I used to. I'm not going to a place just to say I played at North Carolina or I played at Virginia. Like, you can go and be the number one pick in the draft from Oklahoma State. You can go and be the number one pick in the draft from overseas. You can go and be the number one pick in the draft from, the G League Ignite or Overtime Elite. Like the pull that the laundry once had and that these totemic coaches had is just not there anymore. And so it's up to like you have to really fight and claw. And again, Mike Young has been devastated in the portal. He's like offensively, I agree with you. I think he's probably one of the three best offensive coaches in the league. But if you don't have the players and you're not doing that part of the job, and again, he's constrained by the resources at Virginia Tech, but It's hard. It's hard. And he's not, he is by no means the only one who has struggled in that capacity. But it's a fascinating question and kind of a sad one at the same time.
It seems like the ACC has some guys that are good technicians, good X and O's guys. But when you compare it to the SEC, and I know that we're going to, obviously the factor of resources comes into this as well. But look at the guys in that conference, John Calipari and, Bruce Pearl and kind of the list goes on and on. I'm trying to think of some other names right now.
Nate Oates is probably the best young coach in the game right now.
Nate Oates, Chris Beard, like these are recruiting guys. Like they live for the transfer portal and, kind of this NIL age that we're in right now in college basketball. And it seems like they're just more suited for the game at this point. And that's why you're seeing them with better rosters and, at this point, better teams.
Well, if you, I mean, again, not to, it's the ACC, what the ACC used to be is what the SEC is now. And it was like, if you were a top portal recruit or top high school recruit, and it's like, okay, do I want to go to, even if you're just comparing blue bloods, like a Kentucky versus like a North Carolina, Jasper Johnson is a five-star kid in the upcoming class, and he was making that decision. Do I want to go to Kentucky, Alabama, or North Carolina? And he ends up picking, obviously, the SEC school. And that's because if you're in the SEC, like this year, I think I could be mistaken on this, based on the last time I looked at the net, which was like yesterday sometime. I believe there are eight SEC teams who, when they play, you play them at home, count as a quad one win. The ACC, there's like one. It's, you got to beat Duke to have a resume win. So it is, yes, these guys live for recruiting and they love recruiting and they have success in recruiting. And I think they're more oriented towards that and have adapted to sort of the transient nature of the modern era, maybe a little bit better than ACC coaches have. But also the product they're selling is a lot more appealing right now in terms of on court, in terms of success, in terms of putting guys in the league. I mean, the SEC is doing what the ACC used to be.
And to your point, it doesn't matter about brands as much now because you look at some of these SEC schools. You mentioned that, and I checked it is eight teams. They're in the top 30 of the net right now for the SEC. Georgia is one of those schools. When has Georgia ever been a basketball name out there? That does not happen. And then,
Right.
look at some of the other Mississippi State, Auburn and Tennessee and Florida, they've kind of been up there. Kentucky, obviously, that's a blue blood. They're one of the best programs in the country. So it is interesting just kind of looking at the brand power now that may it's not the same as it used to be. And that's nothing says that more than you look at AJ Dabansa going to BYU. Like, that's not been a they haven't even been that great at basketball. I mean, Mark Pope had some decent teams there, but in Kansas State, what they've done there, they're always kind of in the, kind of getting mentioned in recruiting games. So yeah, to your point, like the brands are gone.
If I was, my colleagues and I did a story, a series of stories over the summer about NIL and recruiting and sort of, what it actually looks like behind the scenes. And based on what we learned in that process, I would say that of the five to seven highest spending NIL schools for this season for their roster construction, I believe the ACC has one of those seven. And it's not the best team in the league. It's not Duke. Versus, off the top of my head, I can count already multiple Big 12 schools, multiple Big 10 schools, multiple SEC schools. So it's just a totally different beast. And, the financial element of it is certainly a key component. But no, you're right. You're spot on. The branding is, kids are not, they don't grow up dreaming of playing college basketball anymore. They don't dream of playing at North Carolina or Virginia or any of these places anymore. They're dreaming about going to the league and how are you going to help me get there? And right now, again, the product the ACC is selling is not a particularly compelling
I don't want to be all doom and gloom, especially in the new year. We got to
pitch.
start 2025 off at the right on the right
You're not
note.
wrong. You're not wrong.
Is there a positive for the ACC? Is there a way out of this, do you think?
I think there is. And I think, it is predicated largely on this new generation of coaches sort of recreating. I don't think the ACC or any league will ever be able to fully recreate what we're talking about in that Hall of Fame that has been an exodus in the last 7 years, last four, other than Patino, basically. Like, that's not replicable. But if you get a guy like a Micah Shrewsbury, And he is already recruiting at a really high level. He already has five-star guys lined up to go to Notre Dame. He, I think, is, X's and O's wise, up there as one of the best coaches in the country already. He has proven, getting Matt Elko, out of the portal, he's proven he can do that. You get a guy like a Micah Shrewsbury, and he's around for a while, and he grows and he builds that program. I think Damon Stoudamire has the same potential at a Georgia Tech. I already mentioned Pat Kelsey at Louisville. These are the guys, Shire, obviously, at Duke. These are the guys who have to endure and succeed and have to sort of rebuild that brand value. And the good news for the ACC is, all four of those guys I just mentioned, I think, have the potential to be successful in the long term at their respective schools. But as we've learned with Indiana, you're only ever one bad hire away from taking a significant drop. I mean, we saw that with Louisville the past 2 years. So I think it is imperative that the ACC, especially because I don't think we're done with this coaching turnover. We mentioned there's two interim jobs right now. I don't know that either of those are going to become full-time hires. I think there is the potential that at least two more jobs could open up at the end of this season. The ACC has to continue nailing its present-day hires. It has to nail guys who are equipped not to succeed in the old ACC, but who are equipped to mine the portal and make more with your resources, and find guys in a Moneyball style approach where they can be successful. And I think the league has done a good job. The league schools have done a good job of that so far. That just has to continue now. And again, we still have a few more of these, old guard left to go. But that to me is the hope if you're the ACC, if you're Jim Phillips. It's that all of those younger guys continue to do so. And, I mean, like, it is not in any way out of the picture that Duke wins a national title this year. If Jon Shire wins a national title and he's in his 30s, I think he's 36-ish. If Jon Shire wins a national title this year in his third season at Duke, do you know what that does for the league's image and league's enhancement? I mean, this is the first year the league hasn't had a title-winning coach since before Dean Smith won his first title in the 80s. So, like, having that, starting to rebuild that pedigree, it's going to take time, but it's going to also just take success like that.
I've always thought, if you're a team in the ACC, you want to see other teams do well in the NCAA tournament and get kind of that big success. And we've seen that with the ACC in recent years. It hasn't turned anything around in the regular season. We keep talking about every single year, oh, they look great in March, and then they come back the next year and it's like rinse and repeat, and like they're doing the exact same things. And like, I remember Tony Bennett saying, oh, it just takes a while for like all these new pieces to kind of get together and gel and stuff. And I'm like, well, the SEC is having a good time down there. I don't know if you check these guys out. That's kind of, I wanted to take a bigger picture look at the ACC and just kind of where it is right now. I think we'll talk about Duke a little bit more coming up after the break, but I really like what they've done there. I like what Jon Shire has done there. I'm still kind of waiting to see on the, I guess, the X's and O's with Shire.
I
That's
think
kind
that's
of
fair.
my biggest question with him. Just, and I've watched a good amount of their games this year, and especially I believe it was the Kansas game, or no, Kentucky game, when you had Cooper Flagg, kind of,
ISO ball,
just
baby.
yeah, ISO, and I'm just like, you got a really good team, man. Like, I know Cooper Flagg is like, he is cream of the crop, but like, come on, like, you don't need to like throw
There's
him to
four
the
other guys
wolves.
out there,
Yeah,
yeah.
don't throw him to the wolves down there. Like, I've seen a lot of good NBA players come out of the ACC in recent years, but you don't need to do that. But we're going to talk a little bit more about the rest of the ACC and kind of this season, the here and now. Also, UVA. We'll talk a little bit about Virginia coming up right after the break here on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. My guest is Brennan Marks, writer, college basketball writer for The Athletic. Brennan, I know your expertise, you're down in Chapel Hill and Duke, but I know you keep an eye on the rest of the ACC. What have you made of, I guess, Virginia so far in the post-Tony Bennett era, all how many ever months of it?
Yeah, no, and however many months is a great way to put it because it still feels like simultaneously fresh and like it's been this way for forever now. I need to preface by saying I was intrigued curiously by Virginia's roster entering this season, and I think that even if Tony Bennett were still coaching, the results may not be too different from what they've been so far. I think that Ron Sanchez has done a fine job. I think from a talent perspective, you just don't have the pieces that you need to win at the highest level of the conference. Like, I was the biggest Elijah Saunders fan in the world. I went out to San Diego State last year, and I thought that just as a person, he was fascinating. Like, I sat down for a story about sort of how they were following up the Final Four, and he told, I think he's the only player I can recall, but he said, I started the year as a starter, and mentally for me, it was the worst thing possible. I felt so much more comfortable coming off the bench where I could provide energy, and I just felt out of my element as a starter. And he was much more effective coming off the bench, which, like, how many guys are going to give up that spot, especially in a place that's coming off a national title appearance? So I've always been a fan of him, really liked his game last year, figured that the defensive aptitude and the culture from San Diego State would transfer to Virginia, which I think largely it has. I think he's been probably one of Virginia's two best players this year, especially lately. He's come on as a scorer a lot more, which they need him to be. I think Virginia's got two double-digit scorers this year, which is
That's yeah.
not
That's
super
right.
encouraging. Obviously the TJ Power Hour experiment has not planned out as anybody expected. Not having Jalen Worley obviously hurts things as well. Like, so I, you know, I do I think that Ron Sanchez has done like a bad job? No, not at all. I think that he's done about as well as can be expected with where he's at. He doesn't have the worst offense in the ACC. I guess that is a good thing. It looks like a watered down version of what Virginia was at its best, which
Yeah.
was a methodical offense that doesn't have the NBA talent to be effective in limited possessions, and which defensively has some pieces, but isn't elite enough. Maybe doesn't have that like true rim protection, doesn't have the length across the board that it needs to be a top five defense. But I mean, I think Ron has done a nice job. Terrible position to be put into, but I think this is a team that's probably going to be one that we're talking about that trips up a Louisville, a Wake Forest, a North Carolina. I mean, North Carolina hasn't won at Virginia in 85 years. But I mean, is this a tournament team? No. Is it a team that could win a game or two in the ACC tournament? I think so. But I'm more interested in sort of the future for Virginia and what comes after the season, both in terms of who is retained from a coaching and personnel standpoint, and sort of what the next era looks like for the Hoos.
Well, we're going to get to the future in just a second, but I want to touch on Elijah Saunders. I just wrote a piece on him for thesaber.com because you mentioned he's as of lately he has kind of turned it on for Virginia. He's gotten more comfortable, and that's kind of what he told me, that he's kind of found his spot, gotten to kind of where he wants to be in the offense. It's a lot of it's not he's not a go-to scorer in the in that sense, but the way that they can get them the ball is post-ups against NC State. He had a lot of mismatches. He is for They say 6'8". I'm still questionable if it's a true 6'8", but 240 pounds and really strong. He might be one of the strongest players I've seen at Virginia in some time. And he's a decent athlete, but he's got a good a sense down there in the post. And then he also lately he's been kind of been encouraged to take more straight line drives to the basket, kind of create off the dribble a little bit. Ron Sanchez, he's made Elijah Saunders, the guy in the games that you're trying to get him the ball to shoot free throws if you're trying to protect a lead, which is crazy because you have one of the best 3-point shooters in the NCAA in Isaac McNealy right next to him. But surprisingly, McNealy is not a good free throw shooter historically and has missed a lot of big ones. We were kind of joking at the end of that NC State game. It was getting down to that point where you had a 5-point lead and someone had to go to the free throw line. And, McNealy didn't go anywhere near the ball. He didn't, it
No,
almost seemed
no.
like he didn't want the ball. So they got it to Saunders, and he still missed the free throw. And O'Connell had a shot at the buzzer. It was almost too deja vu, if you know what I mean. But yeah, so I guess just the personnel is interesting. I think Saunders is an interesting piece. But I've kind of felt all year that Saunders and McNealy would be great third, fourth options on teams. I don't know if they're at the level to be one and two options.
No, I completely agree with you. I think that those two are, again, I mean, I would even say that if you have those two as sort of your, complementary, secondary scorers, not even tertiary, like secondary scorers, like McNealy is one of the best shooters in the country. And especially if he had somebody else he was playing with who drew a little more gravity, he would have even more room to operate with. And again, like I said, I agree with you on Saunders for sure. His touch has always sort of impressed me. At the free throw line, you see it, limited volume, but I do think he has some stretch potential, maybe at a larger volume in the future. But no, they need somebody who commands an opposing defense's attention to take things away from them. Like those guys, like in ball screen situations, it's fine. But like if you're an opposing defense, I think you're okay with letting McNealy get the ball as a handler in a ball screen situation and trying to beat you off the dribble. Versus if you have somebody else in that action with Saunders, then he's much more dangerous as a popper, as a roller, because he does have the strength and the touch that we talked about. And then you have my McNealy spacing on the far side. That to me is a pretty effective, trio. But again, obviously you're missing the head of the snake there. So I agree with you in that respect. I think that's like, again, that's the guy who, when Virginia has been its best, it has had that guy. It's had a guy, a Jerome, a Brogdon, even a Perantes. Like, I mean, to go back a little bit further, like they had that guy, and they don't have that guy right now. So, the question is, can the next guy, if it's not Ron, and again, I think he's done a good job, but I don't think he's probably going to get the full-time nod. Then I think it's a question of, okay, can you get a guy who can keep those two while also maybe bring in the head of the snake, to sort of, maximize what they're capable of.
Yeah, and we've kind of made fun of this in a lot of forums and stuff. Is, Virginia fans were pretty spoiled going from London Parente at point guard to Ty Jerome to Kihei Clark to Reese Beekman, and then it just kind of fell off a cliff. And you're trying to shoehorn in Andrew Rohde and Day Day Ames and even Isaac McNealy into this point guard lead ball handler, and you just don't have that guy. And honestly, I know some people will say, oh, they missed Jalen Worley, but I don't know if he was going to be that guy either. He's a good defensive player. He would have added something else to the team just with his athleticism and ability to get to the hoop, but I don't think he was going to be that next, echelon of point guard that we've seen in the past for Virginia. One guy that you're familiar with, and you mentioned him before, TJ Power. What is happening with TJ Power? I know Duke fans were excited when they first got him. I know Virginia fans were really excited when they got him because they wanted him coming out of high school and then he went to Duke. What is going on with this guy?
I mean, he looks to me like a guy who's completely lost his confidence at this point. And last year, he, as a freshman at Duke, on a good, not great Duke team, on a Duke team that had a lot of young guys who all wanted minutes, who all, I mean, Duke had probably, five guys that were natural fours, and like just didn't have enough minutes for all of them. Like, TJ Power started to earn a role in like January. But he was never more than a spot shooter. And I think he knew then, like, this is, his role was so clearly defined. It was, you're coming in, you're going to stand in the corner, and you're going to shoot. And I think this year, especially early on, it looked like he was pressing, whether because that's what he thought he needed to do or because that's what his assignment was. He was not capable of doing that. And, now again, like I said, he looks like somebody who's just completely lost his confidence. Physically speaking, he is not the best athlete in the world. He's a good athlete. I think that he probably needs to get stronger still, like in terms of his body. He came in very lean, obviously played baseball. You don't want to get too bulked up for that. He still probably can afford to put on some strength, especially because I do think he's a more natural four than a three. I don't know that he has the quickness to be a three at the high major level. But now it's a question of like, okay, how do we give this guy a role where we can rebuild his confidence a little bit? And like, maybe you can try and space the floor a little bit with him and McNealy and Saunders and like hope that, but having him be any sort of like creator, I think is just a setting him up for failure at this point. You've got to get back to basics and sort of rebuild him into at least a useful rotation player. He doesn't have to be a star or a 10 point per game scorer. You need a guy who's giving you 5 points a game in 15 minutes. And, I don't know that Sanchez even feels comfortable with that at this point. I don't blame him. I mean, again, the guy looks like a shell of himself, which is really sad because I thought that he had some potential in that offense.
Yeah, absolutely. He started the first five games of the season. Then, as of late, against NC State and American, he's played 4 and 3 minutes. He scored both times that he's come in. But in early in the year, I was kind of saying to some other people, it just doesn't seem like they really have a role for him. Like they would just be like stand in the corner and wait there for a three. But then he wasn't even making that because his confidence just looked shot. So that's been one of the more disappointing ones that I think hasn't really gotten talked about because of the team's overall struggles. Real quick, I know you said it's not going to happen. How would you rate Virginia's chances of getting into an NCAA tournament? I think I saw one bracket person and I don't do a lot of bracketology in the month of January. One said, maybe a 14-6 record in the ACC, that'll get you there. What do you think?
I think it's more about who you beat, than it is about the pure numbers. Like the fact of the matter is, there is not a statement win on the resume. Like the best, like Villanova is your best win, and that's a guy who's also fighting for his job
Yeah.
that has one of the worst high major defenses in the entire country. That's not one the
And they
committee's like.
lived up to it in
They sure
that
did. They sure, what did Virginia score 70? Oh my
game.
God. So I think, again, that's not one the committee is going to go back, and it's not going to be like, oh, whoa, they beat Villanova. We got to make sure. No, like that's not going to happen. So, yeah, I think obviously you've got to beat. I mean, not to say beat Duke or bust, but like if you don't beat Duke, then you got to beat all of North Carolina and, all of those other sort of contenders. And then you probably need to make at least the semis of the ACC tournament. Like, you're going to have to compile your way there. It's going to have to be because you're not going to have the quality ones. Now, if you beat Duke, that gives you a little bit more of a margin for error. In terms of the computer metrics, they're obviously on the offensive side of things, especially not kind right now. Continued improvement in that respect. But I mean, I won't say it's impossible, but
Scale of 1 to 10.
I mean, 10 being you're 100% a lock and one being you're absolutely not getting in, maybe a three.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's not just the fact that they don't have the resume. Nothing they've done inspires confidence that they're going to acquire the resume. It's not like, okay, well, like they've lost a bunch of close games and they look like they're right there and it's like a late turnover, they miss a buzzer beater. Like, no, like they look sorted offensively in some of these games. And, like you said, the Memphis one was one that they really, really could have used. Really, really could have used. I think that's going to be the one that, if they end up being close to the cut line, is one that Virginia and its fans will really look back on and say, we needed to have that one. But is it impossible? No. Is it likely in any sense? No. And again, like if you don't beat Duke, then that just makes the bar that much higher for the number of wins you have to compile to get there.
Yeah, that Monday in February is going to be a really interesting one for Virginia. I'm sure people will get up for it. I was actually surprised on a New Year's Eve game at noon against NC State at home. It was probably their best crowd of the season, so I was actually pretty impressed because even for their home opener or their season opener, like no one was there. I was just like, all right, guys, you're not even going to give them a chance to like coach the team. Like I know you're upset still that Tony's not here, but come on. So with that being said, we talked a little bit about forecasting out for the future. Ron Sanchez, you're probably not thinking he's going to be back next year. I know The Athletic, as soon as Tony Bennett retired, you got to crank out the article with the list of 15 candidates. But what is Virginia, I guess, what do they need to look at going forward as a program?
I think, based on my understanding of like Virginia and its priorities, like Tony was sort of as close to the model of what you want as it gets. It's somebody who understood what Virginia was and just basically maxed out what was capable there. Like he was never going to get the five stars and the best players out of high school. But was he going to get, some solid four stars and then develop them and establish continuity? Yes. Is that harder to do now? Also, yes. But they need somebody who understands that and understands like what the restraints are at a place like Virginia. Because as Tony's proven, you can be successful at the highest level. A little bit of a different era, but still, you can be successful at the highest level there. So I think you want a coach who is coming in and understands those restraints, probably someone who has some experience in that regard. So somebody who has maximized talent or who has, turned the sum into something greater than its parts. You want somebody who understands like financially and resource-wise, you're not going to be top five, maybe even not top half of the ACC. So you are going to have to, work in the margins and be really smart about your evaluation. And I think there are, and you need someone who understands like that Virginia is, it is it's a bedrock. It's consistency. Like that's what this place is. And so, you know, to me, the guy who makes the most sense and who I think would be an awesome fit culturally, who would bring enthusiasm to the program, who is young, who is someone you can build around, who could fit into that tier we were talking about of the Shrewsburys and the Kelseys and the Shires as leading the next wave for the ACC is Mitch Henderson. Up at Princeton. I think he's obviously done a terrific job, has succeeded in the NCAA tournament, has you know, somehow got NBA talent into the Ivy League. Again, is young, understands that, has built consistency. Like, to me, he makes a lot of sense. Richie McKay is another name who I've heard a couple of times, obviously is very familiar with the program, very close by. Liberty's having a good year as well. Those are the two who I would say are probably at the top of the proverbial, you know, wish list at this point. Between them, I might go Henderson just because I think that he probably brings a little bit more excitement. And for a new coach, you do need excitement because excitement equals dollar signs. But Virginia needs somebody in that mold who understands what the constraints are and who understands, okay, I may be in a box here, but I can push this out all the way to the walls. And if I do that, we can have a really successful program here. But that takes a special type of person. You know, it's Virginia is not looking at the same candidates as like a North Carolina, for example. You know, they've both been successful at the highest levels in the last 10 years. But you know, Apple's completely different thing. So those candidates exist. I think those two are two of the best of them. Not saying that Ron Sanchez is definitely not going to be the guy, but those two I think would sort of fit the criteria. And at some point, you know, given the way this year has gone and what you're describing in terms of the atmosphere. You know, maybe a fresh start is not the worst thing in the world.
No, and I think it's kind of felt that way. And we got a couple more months. We'll see how the rest of the season plays out. Obviously, they got a good win against NC State, a good comeback win. So we'll see how it goes. They got Louisville on Saturday. Real quick on, and you made the point, like not looking at the same character, same kind of candidates as UNC. Not even looking at the same candidates that Miami is, because it's just a different vibe, a different style, a different type of place, and so you're not looking for the same types of guys. And on the NIL and resources front, this is really interesting to me because in the last month, we've seen the football team get significant investment there. We've seen the women's basketball team get significant investment there. Men's basketball is the one that hasn't yet. And to your point, maybe that's just the lack of excitement. Like, I don't know what was exciting about Tony Elliott going 5-7 this year and, losing these games, but maybe a new face kind of gets the support out there, or maybe, Ron Sanchez just getting that full-time contract, maybe that gets the support out there. But, they're the one program right now that you're still waiting on. All right, when are they going to kind of jump into the NIL pool like these other programs that Virginia have? Real quick, rest of the ACC. Quick thoughts, most surprising ACC team in a good way.
Most surprising ACC team in a good way. I would say Pitt. I would say Pitt. I mean, I think that, you know, this is a team that, like, you know, we knew that Lowe was going to come back and was due for a sophomore bump. And our NBA draft expert at The Athletic, Sam Vecenie, even at the end of last year, had him pegged as a potential first rounder. He's been one of the best point guards in the country. I think he's in KenPom's, you know, player, national player of the year, top 10. He's been sensational. Ish Legette, again, going from sixth man to starter. Was incredibly consistent before the injury. Damian Dunn looks like one of the shrewdest transfer portal moves. Again, dealing with the injury, has been out for a little bit, but looks like a really shrewd portal move. He was just totally in the doghouse at Houston last year. And so, like, freeing him up, he looks like a newfound player again. You know, Cam Corn looks like a really sneaky ad from you know, an inter-ACC steal. But Pitt, I would probably say. I mean, to me, Pitt's probably the second or third best team in the ACC right now. In the preseason, I probably had them pegged like sixth or seventh, thought they'd be a fringe tournament team. I feel much more confident in that now. And, you know, they're playing this way, like I said, without some of their best players. So I go Pitt for most surprising in a good way.
I would probably say SMU. I've been a little surprised by what the Mustangs have done so
Another good
far.
answer. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Andy Enfield was just trying to get out of USC before he got the can. So like, what he to see what he's done at SMU in such a short time, and obviously Virginia, we saw them up close. They lost their ACC opener at SMU, and they play them again actually in a couple weeks. So that'll be an interesting one to see. How about most surprising in a bad way?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple here. Unfortunately, there's a lot more contenders on this side. I personally thought that Georgia Tech was going to take more of a leap than it has. I thought that Georgia Tech might be a team that could challenge to be in the tournament. And, you lose to North Florida, and, not that the wheels have gone completely off the tracks, but I expected a bigger jump in Damon Stoudamire's second season there. Miami, I thought Miami, I mean, obviously they're now dealing with the Larrañaga situation, but I thought that there were more pieces there. I like the guys they brought in the portal, Brandon Johnson. Obviously, Jahlil Bethe came in as a potential lottery pick, and that hasn't panned out quite like anyone expected. So that would be another one. And then Wake Forest. I mean, you can't have that. I mean, I know I have Wake Forest in that tier of tournament contenders, and they still are, but Steve Forbes has been arguably a top three offensive coach in the ACC the last couple of seasons. Wake Forest has the worst offense in terms of adjusted efficiency in the league right now. They look awful. I mean, I don't know if you've watched the full Wake Forest game recently, but the lack of a true point guard there has just been devastating. Obviously not having Omaha Blue, he was looking like he was starting to become that five-star player that Steve Forbes is known for, like, taking from the transfer portal and turning into treasure. He's dealing with the injury. Hunter Salas hasn't been quite as good as we thought he might be coming back this year. Parker Fredrickson didn't really make, I mean, he looked like he was going to be a sharpshooter and has been the opposite of that. Cam Hildreth struggled with turnovers. Like, Wake Forest was not nearly as, has not been nearly as good as I thought they would be. And again, that could be a term that ends up making the NCAA tournament, but I thought that they would be like a potential top 25 team, and that is certainly not the case.
No, I thought the same thing in the preseason. I think they really miss Boopie Miller, which
Which
is
is crazy to hear.
exactly. they need a point guard. That's, putting way too much on Salas right now. How about North Carolina? What have you made of their season so far? Obviously, the lack of a big man is kind of like the big headliner there.
Do you want to play in the front court for North Carolina? Because if you want, I mean, it's bleak. And like, I didn't put them in my most disappointing list because I thought they might struggle some in that respect. But yeah, obviously the lack of front court talent, not even depth, just like high end front court talent. Like Jalen Withers is a rotational ACC big. Maybe Jalen Washington is the same. I think that's probably being generous. Same thing for Van Allen Lubin. Like, these are like, we're talking about like seventh, eighth men here who are playing starting minutes. North Carolina's biggest problem is that its four best players are all 6'4" and shorter. That's its problem. And you just can't win games that way. And I think that if RJ Davis were making threes at the same clip that he was last year, they probably close out a couple of these, non-conference losses that they could have turned into wins. But he struggled. He has. Elliot Cadeau, I've never been the biggest fan of his game just because I don't know, obviously the passing is there, but defensively he's been picked on for a season and a half now. Doesn't seem to have made tremendous strides in that area. He's always going to be physically limited to some extent. The shooting, he looks like he's losing his confidence. Again, like, that UCLA win is the one that North Carolina has on its resume that it can go, hey, we did beat somebody here. But again, it's a similar situation. You need to compile your way, and you need to beat a Clemson, beat Duke in one of the two times you play them, and do some stuff that you can't afford to, flame out of the ACC tournament. So the margin for error is just super thin there. And that's another program that, like, look, if North Carolina's on the wrong side of the NCAA tournament bubble, that would be two missed postseasons in the last 3 years with Hubert Davis. And I don't know that North Carolina would necessarily make a move right away, but it would mean some difficult conversations in Chapel Hill because that is certainly far from the standard there. The last guy who did that didn't last very long.
Yeah. It's a far cry in the big situation from the days of Zeller, Henson, even last year with Bacot. Like it's a far drop off. Real quick, and we'll get you out of here. Will Duke run the gauntlet, win the regular season title, win the ACC tournament title? Do they drop, how many conference games do they drop?
I don't think they're going undefeated. I've seen this around, and like, I posted something on Twitter the other day, or X, excuse me, about, if I had a dollar for every time somebody told me, some Duke fan told me or asked me, like, you think it could happen? Could we really go undefeated? Like, I could buy a lot of blue and onions for like all of our reporter friends.
That's a good investment.
It is, honestly, I can't think of a better way to spend my pittance earnings. But yeah, I think they're going to win the ACC regular season probably comfortably. Like, I could see them winning it by like three games. In a single elimination tournament, anything could happen, especially if they're playing like You know, if they're playing a Pitt or a Clemson, like sure, or you know, maybe North Carolina, weird stuff always happens in those games. But yeah, I would pick them to win both of those. I'd be shocked if they lost more than three conference games. The best game left on Duke's schedule is against Illinois in Madison Square Garden at the end of February. It's the best opponent Duke has left on its schedule. And, you know, especially if the ACC sort of continues this downward trajectory, I think that's something you could see more leagues or more teams in the league look to exploring. But I will say yes to regular season title, yes to conference tournament title, no to going undefeated in the conference, and I'm going to say yes to at least the Elite Eight.
All
That's
right.
my Duke prediction.
All right. That is Brandon Marks, college basketball writer for The Athletic. Brandon, thanks so much for coming on. Follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. Check out thesaber.com for all your coverage of Virginia Athletics. A new year and more to come on the Who's On podcast. We will see y'all next week.